Why don't we get you to return to sea and any Wildlife Federation come up here who can field questions. And so I'll open the floor up for any questions from either the division or from the Federation. Okay, any questions from anybody? Pete.
What do you guys envision the...
Hey, Greg, get your microphone. Yeah.
Testing. How do you guys envision the provisions of the petition being enforced?
For that question, I'd like to defer to Dick Hamilton, who is head of the CAMO Coalition for the North Carolina Wildlife Federation and former director, executive director of the North Carolina Wildlife Federation, okay. Wildlife Commission, excuse me.
I'm Dick Hamilton. Just by way of introduction, I'm a fish and wildlife biologist with a graduate degree from NC State University. I've had a career in fish and wildlife management, including law enforcement with the Wildlife Resources Commission of 37 years. The last 25 of those years were directly involved with fisheries management and law enforcement policy and implementation with the Wildlife Resources Commission. I was chief of the Division of Inland Fisheries for 4 years or so, and I was deputy director for field operations, and finally I was executive director with ultimate authority on law enforcement policy and implementation. And I believe that we did a pretty good job. And I have a great respect for wildlife and marine fisheries law enforcement officers. Any natural resource conservation agency has a variety of various components, including things like management, policy development, research, education, administration, and law enforcement. And in my mind, law enforcement is the most important component of any successful natural resource agency program for a couple of reasons, many reasons, but one would be that it's the eye through which the public views the agency and its programs and its service to the public. The second thing is that no law, no regulation can be more effective than its the effectiveness of its law enforcement. Now, I have familiarity with the Marine Patrol. I've reviewed their work. I've supported their efforts in many ways, in the legislature, in the budget process, and otherwise. And they are a well-organized, vigorous enforcement group, quite capable of enforcing the laws and rules that you have on the books today, which include many of the same aspects of what we're talking about. There are only four categories in this petition of things that might have rules attached to them. Of course, rules need to be enforced. The first is the designation of these shrimp trawl management areas. They would have no role other than just if they were asked their opinions about the way this should be developed. They do nursery areas now, and they do everything by way of navigation, I presume, courses and meets and bounds, and they don't have to post anything like that. They know where they are, and they know what the rules are that apply to the existing no-trawl areas. And so they wouldn't have any additional burden or involvement in these shrimp trawl management areas that I can foresee. Now, the second area was setting an opening date or criteria for an opening date, which would involve trawls, sample trawls in Pamlico Sound. I do not envision that our law enforcement officers would have any role in that unless it was some kind of an emergency. Your biologist should be doing that, or you could probably have it done by contract or by volunteers. Anyway, it would be a simple matter, it seems to me, to have a sampling program in Pamlico Sound that would determine when the shrimp count reached 60 or June the 15th. I know you could determine June the 15th. The other areas which law enforcement might have some active involvement or would have some active involvement is the 110-foot head rope limitation on trawls. Well, that limitation already exists in many waters of the state, so they know how they're enforcing that, where it exists, and they're not going to go measure these trawls and say, oh, this is 115 feet. He's going to be charged. I mean, that's just not the way law enforcement has done this. It's done by a carefully designed strategic procedure. And these officers know when they see a trawl, they know how big it is. And if you see two or four of them behind a boat, you know, you've got a pretty good clue there that, and this guy's in a shrimp trawl management area or in any area that's not allowed over 110, they could write him a ticket. Charge them, and they should. Now, they're not going to stop any boat and trawl process. I mean, that would not be very smart, unless it's a very obvious trawling in a closed area in a closed season. Then, of course, you would stop them. But you don't interfere with the normal operation of shrimp trawlers just to check their head rope length or for any other purpose. As far as I know, they don't stop them. They would do an inspection in the dock and on the dock or when the boats are anchored or some of that nature. I mean, you got some good people here. They can tell you what they do now, and it would be my thought that they would continue what they're doing now without any. They're quite robust. They've got a large number of officers. I think it's 70 or so. They're well trained. They're well equipped. They've got personal protective gear. They've got boats, vessels, vehicles, all kinds of detection equipment such as telescopes and that kind of. They got aircraft. Aircraft is the most effective means of patrolling areas of large open areas. We do this quite effectively in the Wildlife Commission, and it would certainly be applicable to what we're talking about here. So, my opinion, based on my experience with the Wildlife Commission and overseeing its law enforcement program for several decades, I would say that your Marine Patrol is quite capable. They're quite able to handle this minor additional requirement. It's not, in my mind, it's not a big deal. You're doing most of this anyway. Now, on the 3 days, of trawling, they're open now, and they're monitoring that now, and they're enforcing the rules now on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday till 9 o'clock, and then all weekend. I mean, this is not a strange thing for them. They know how to do it, and I'm sure they have a strategy of how to approach it most efficiently and economically. Now, the other 2 days on closure, they will have to do some work on closure, but I think it would be a matter of building an intelligent network. That's where most of your information comes from, is from reports and from observations of people who are out there, and from officers and other agencies, all kinds of cooperation between the law enforcement divisions of the state. So they would have to monitor the extra closures 2 days, 48 hours, but I don't think that would be a particular onerous or expensive job. Certainly not to the extent that it was estimated in the last fiscal analysis. That was a little beyond the realm of possibility, in my opinion. So that's what I would have to say about law enforcement. Don't worry about it too much. I got a lot of faith in these guys. I believe they could do a good job. I know they would. And you wouldn't have any problems from law enforcement. Problems might be from other places. That's all I have to say, unless they have a question about that.
Thank you.
Sam?
I really don't have any questions about the scientific merit or the actual management structures you have in place. My main concern is, resources of the division. And, after hearing, I stand with the director in opposition to this petition, and mainly because of how many dollars spent, hours spent on the hands of the division already on this. We've talked about these things at length, and they should be discussed in the fisheries management plan procedure. So I guess my question is how do you validate when the director's just said that it's going to take even longer to get to these, if we do accept this petition, how do you validate your position based on that? How can you, it's going to take longer, it's going to be more difficult and spend more dollars after we've already been through this?
Thank you for your question. I think that's a valid question, and I'm happy to take it to try to answer that, and would invite Lewis or Liz to add anything they'd like to here. I mean, my understanding is either the petition is moving forward if this commission chooses to approve the petition, or the shrimp FMP process is moving forward. My understanding is that it's one or the other. So I think the division is in the best position to decide how to best dedicate their resources. We believe they could do both. The DMF plays as the director just laid out, would play a somewhat limited role in moving this petition forward should it, at least at the early stages, should this commission approve the petition. Again, approving the petition today only sets in motion the rulemaking process, which allows for substantial public input, public comment periods, public hearings, and so on. Should the commission vote to adopt the petition today, the proposed rule package will be back before the commission at the point that the rules have proceeded through the rulemaking process. The division has the option to refer that fiscal note analysis, that fiscal analysis, to OSBM. I think the director just outlined how he would like to handle that. Our view is that the division should have the resources to dedicate to both, but should it not have the resources to dedicate to both, we hope that this commission votes to move forward with the petition in front of us. The FMP process, the FMP itself, is just one tool that the commission has to manage the fisheries resources of the state. We believe that the commission has the authority to adopt this petition outside of the FMP process, and we hope that you will agree to do so.
Testing. As a scientist, can you, this is directed to Lewis, can you give us a nutshell version of how this petition would benefit the resource? That's what it's all about to me.
Sure, that could be a couple of dissertations. Right now, with the amount of bycatch that we're seeing in the fishery, in addition to a lot of other issues, where if we look at the link frequency distribution of the catches of many of the fishes that we harvest today, they've gone to where they're mostly juvenile fish. And the first law of population dynamics is to allow the fish to grow and spawn at least once before they're harvested. The problem where we are right now, I believe, is that we're just so over capacity in the fishery. And I think you don't have to look much farther than the blue crab fishery to know that people are fishing way more pots than are necessary to catch the number of crabs. Same thing with the shrimp trawl fishery. I mean, all you have to do is look at those trawl tracks and look at the amount of effort and the amount of shrimp being caught to see that we're over capacity in virtually all our fisheries. The difficulty there is that capacity is a very difficult thing to measure. And the South Atlantic tried to do some capacity work in the black sea bass pot fishery years ago, but I'm unaware of a whole lot of capacity work that's been done. But everybody recognizes it the shrimp trawl fishery now, you've got about 478 boats making about 16 trips a year. It's a big fishery. The amount of bycatch you start taking that stuff out, what are the impacts to the ecosystem of losing half a billion, a billion and a half juvenile fish? We still don't have an answer on the number of fish taken in the shrimp trawl fishery. There are estimates that folks like to try to make, you know, whether they use a ratio method or whether they use a direct estimate, you know, but we don't have the data to really say exactly what the numbers are. But if you bracket it around half a billion to a billion and a half, you're probably in the realm of correct. And so think about the lost production. Think about the lost production not just to the harvester or the consumer who wants to eat that fish and the amount of biomass there, but the benefits to the ecosystem and the opportunities. I mean, many of the fish that we like to go out and harvest and catch, many of us, speckled trout, red drum, I mean, they eat spot, they eat croaker, they eat shrimp. You know, and so if we look at 10 million pounds of shrimp caught in a year at an average of 40 count, you know, that's about 400 million shrimp a year that are lost to the system, no longer available to the ecosystem. Then add that three or four to one of bycatch, the amount of biomass lost to the system is extraordinary. And that has to have playing a role on the abundance and the distribution of the larger fishes that many of us want to pursue and the economic value of those fishes. So the ecosystem components, we're not even talking about the lizard fishes and the tongue fishes and a lot of the fishes that are involved in this, in the shrimp trawl bycatch, that aren't even mentioned because they're typically not a consumable product and they're just considered to be maybe trash or waste or whatever the case may be, but they're not. And so, you know, and then you ask those questions with the cyanide habitat plan, HAPCs. It says where the fish nursery and spawn. Well, what are the impacts of the spawning, the trawling activity that we see on these spawning aggregations that occur in the spring and the summer and the fall in Pamlico Sound? How are those spawning aggregations impacted by trawling activity? You know, how are the planktonic safe products of those fishes impacted by that type of activity? So I think by reducing the effort, by reducing the number of juvenile fishes taken in the fishery, I think we'll start to see increases in biomass relatively quickly. But if we continue to just focus on bycatch reduction devices to achieve that with the amount of effort in the water, I don't think we're going to bear any fruit. And that's why the combination of the bycatch reduction devices along with a reduction in effort in our most sensitive nursery areas. The petition now took out the ocean. We didn't include that any longer. It should be there. But because of the issues and because of needing to move this forward, the ocean part of the petition was taken out. I still think that's a major problem around the inlets where these fish are funneling out in the fall and where activities are going on. But we've got to start somewhere. And my only concern, with all due respect, and I understand as well as anybody the demands on the division, but, I mean, we started trying to get flounder regulations in place 4 years ago. We're still discussing it. So I'm very concerned about the timeline here. And this seems to be something that can go through far quicker than anything else. And in terms of cost comparison, I'd want to see a cost comparison between moving forward with the rulemaking from the rulemaking process versus the FMP process. I don't know the answer to that, but that would might be something that would help you down the road. I hope that answers your question.
Anyone else? Cameron.
Why hasn't, in y'all's opinion, the ASMFC haven't addressed this issue on species under their jurisdiction?
Well, just for a little bit of background, I served on the ASMFC for 22 years in the technical committees and advisory panels and stock assessment committees and boards, and ultimately was the chair of the commission, and I was also the chair of the South Atlantic Board at one time when I brought this issue to the board in 2014, and I said, y'all, we got a problem with shrimp trawl bycatch. We need to do something about shrimp trawl bycatch. And I said, particularly in North Carolina, it's bad. Now, that was my comments to the board as the director of marine fisheries. And we went around the table, and all the state directors said, Lewis, the problem's in North Carolina. We're not going to tell our shrimpers they got to need to do more when we're not shrimping in the sounds and near shore waters. We don't have the bycatch problem you've got. I mean, how are we going to go back to our shrimpers in South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, tell them they need to do more, and North Carolina's still shrimping in the estuary, in the nursery grounds? And so I believe that a large part of the reason why the ASMFC hasn't addressed this issue, or spot, or croaker, is because of the extraordinary amount of bycatch in the shrimp trawl fishery. And until North Carolina can address that, it's very unlikely that the states are going to be willing to come in with a concomitant plan. No different than the flounder issue you're dealing with right now. The stock assessment said 85% of the mortality was commercial North Carolina. Why would South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, with no commercial fishery for flounder, put more restrictions on their fishermen when the problem, at least what the stock assessment says, is the commercial fishery in North Carolina? So the ASMFC has to be very careful about getting involved with states' rights, but they're certainly not going to penalize the other states for having taken measures that they deem appropriate. Do we believe that what they did in South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida is appropriate? No. We'd be here with a net ban petition if we did. We're saying that we can manage our fisheries in North Carolina for both user groups, commercial and recreational, as long as we do it pragmatically.
Anyone else?
Can we ask the division questions now,
yeah,
too?
Yes, yes, absolutely, yeah.
So I had a couple quick ones, but what they were just saying, do we have an estimate of the number of those fish caught, of, you know, croaker, do we have a number or just a poundage? Basically, and I'm talking about fish listed in, you know, spot, croaker, kingfish, flounder, weakfish, bluefish, Spanish mackerel. I mean, do we have an estimate of the number or?
Yeah, I'd have to defer to staff on that and get back to you, but I know bycatch is highly variable, you know, depending on a lot of factors.
But have we done that on poundage or on numbers or?
I'd have to get back with you, Cameron.
Steve, does DMF have any data that suggests any positive trends in the stock status of spot, croaker, southern flounder, or weakfish?
So, spot and croaker are managed under a traffic light analysis through the ASMFC. Where the traffic light is actually showing warning signs is not in North Carolina, it's actually north of us. But the point I would like to make to the commission is the concerns that the Wildlife Federation bring up, that Dr. Daniel has brought up, are our concerns as well. We know bycatch is an issue, and we know that we need to reduce that bycatch. We have a process in place. The chairman appoints the advisory committee. He can put whoever on the advisory committee he wants with expertise in this. I would suggest that, you know, we're looking at potential advisory committee members here today. But this process that we have through the Fishery Reform Act is a deliberative stakeholder input process. And it allows all groups, recreational, conservation, commercial, everybody to come to the table and have sort of their input on that. And we've already been directed to address the petition. We volunteered to look at that. I will volunteer to look at everything they're bringing in this petition. I'm just saying that the process that we have, I think, is the better place for this to happen rather than for a petition for rulemaking, which takes it outside of that process, even though you do have that authority. So that's, you know, really where we're coming from. We don't oppose necessarily measures in the petition. We just feel that we have a way to move ahead with this and to be deliberative with it with stakeholders on all sides.
May I respond really briefly?
Sure.
Thank you, Director Murphy. Thank you for the question. I do want to point out that the rulemaking process is a process as well. The process is outlined very clearly in the Administrative Procedure Act. I'm sure your counsel, Mr. Meyer, would be happy to walk you through that process. But it is also a process that's outlined in statute that the Commission would follow in order to follow through on this petition should you decide to vote on it today. And I just want to reemphasize that, the time to act on these issues is now. We've been thinking about and talking about bycatch reduction since 2014 when Amendment 1 was first under consideration. Amendment 1 did very little to address bycatch, and I understand that there's a lot that's still ongoing with regard to Amendment 1. Amendment 2 is also quite behind. You all voted 2 years ago to get Amendment 2 off and running, and nothing has since happened. And I understand there are reasons for that, but I understand we acknowledge that there's an FMP process. That process has not been moving and working as it should. The petition is another proposal on the table to address the key issues that we think this commission is obligated to address. And there's a process in place to follow through on the petition and the proposed rules that are before you today. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I just wanted to address to answer your question that I had to refer staff on. So
I was the lead analyst on the croaker assessment, and we did come up with estimates of shrimp trawl bycatch and poundage. And while the assessment for croaker and spot didn't pass peer review, they did endorse our estimates of shrimp trawl bycatch. It was an improvement over the method in the earlier assessment. And the numbers I can get, give me some time, and on a break or at lunch I can let you know what the values were.
That'd be awesome. Okay. Thanks so much. So I guess just being candid, my concern is I remember when we did the shrimp FMP, and we're talking about the timelines here. And, originally the language in the motion was immediately begin FMP 2, and then we had a back and forth, and it was, okay, we'll do that. We'll set it. So it's got set that we would begin Amendment 2, and that we are now a year into that, and I understand that things have come up. But what assurances are there that more stuff doesn't come up and we keep kicking that amendment process down the road?
So this is in part why, we went to the Secretary and the Secretary supported us in the development of some fishery reform language to give us more control over it. When we start a fishery management plan, it involves putting a lot of pieces into place and assembling a lot of very busy people to do things. And so we like to kind of have that planned out so we know what we're doing on a year-to-year basis. And we'll talk about that a little later when we talk about scheduling later in the meeting. No sooner had the ink dried on Amendment 1 than the calls were calling to open up Amendment 2. And like I showed in my presentation, the bycatch reduction that was asked for by this commission asked for bycatch reduction of 40% or greater. And to be perfectly honest, I think many staff didn't think that was possible. But that industry work group, along with National Marine Fisheries and Sea Grant and our biologists, did find some combinations in some areas and configurations that met or exceeded that. So, but that takes a while to do. So like I said, we have, we're ready to start. I mean, we would have started earlier if the petition wouldn't showed up. We were working on other things when the last petition showed up. So I can't have staff go work on things that are not even going to be looked at. I don't have that kind of staff. I mean, I have, Mr. Hamilton said I have 70 officers. I have 56 officers. I probably have about 40 in the field. So we are limited in what we can do. Like I said, we have one economist. He's working on all sorts of other things as well. So, once we start Amendment 2, we'll start Amendment 2 unless you guys stop us for some reason.
When we got to that process, I remember at the end of that Amendment 1, originally the plan was to implement those things
then, and we asked, the industry said, can we have a year for implementation? And so that made sense. So when I put all these extra timelines for implementation, you know, we're looking at the FMP process and how it draws out and the extra implementation time right there. It just feels to me, if we're going to stretch out that 4 years or 3 years of resources dedicated to that, and you're short on staff and short on people, why would we not look for a faster alternative than dedicating something that's going to take us years and years to do? It would seem to me we'd want to go and look into alternatives that will alleviate staff time, not extend it.
So that's the decision you have before you today then. So,
hey, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. One, I'll start with a very simple question. Was there any commercial industry stakeholder input in the development of this petition, any meetings? And to go further than that, you know, was further than commercial industry stakeholder input, was there any input by anybody other than the Wildlife Federation in the development of this petition?
Thank you for your question, Commissioner Blanton. There was extensive public stakeholder input during the last petition process. That there was a 60-person advisory committee meeting wherein we heard from numerous stakeholders about their concerns and support for the petition for rulemaking that was previously before this body and that this body subsequently approved. We also heard loud and clear from the division about their concerns about the former petition or the old petition for rulemaking and its fiscal note, and we took all of that into consideration when developing the proposal that's before you today.
Well, I specifically asked if there was any commercial industry stakeholder input.
There was commercial stakeholder industry input extensive during the public comment period and the AC meetings during the last petition, and we took all of that into consideration when developing this petition, which, as I mentioned before, is narrower in scope than the last petition. So we took all of that very seriously.
I understand, but I actually sat on the Northern Committee at that time, and I heard just as much of the comment as y'all did, and the only input that I heard from the commercial industry is this is not the avenue or approach that they wanted. That's about it. Question number two, has the Wildlife Federation petitioned any other regulatory body to adjust rules on water quality, pollution, coastal development, habitat loss, agricultural runoff, anything that would affect water habitat, nursery areas, or anything that would, you know, significantly affect, you know, the ability of the waterway in the ecosystem to function properly like it should?
Tim Gustwicki, CEO, North Carolina Wildlife Federation. That's what this organization has done since 1945. We're in litigation right now on the Clean Water Act. We deal with endangered species. We fund the Clean Water Management Trust Fund. We deal with runoff. We are dealing with bridge crossings, wetlands loss, so that is what this organization does, work for habitat and wildlife comprehensively. So that is the answer to the question, sir.
Right. Well, you know, I spend a lot of time underwater, a lot, and all I've seen is degraded water quality, degraded habitat, a lot of degradation.
In answer to that,
I don't see any progress being made towards significantly fixing some of these things at all, you know, and so to target one user group, and I understand this is about bycatch, which we're all concerned about, even myself as a commercial member, I think it's a collaborative effort to bring back the state of North Carolina's coastal resources from the ecosystem to the fish, to the animals that use it, to the organisms, the bacteria, and everything involved. And I just don't see where a collaborative effort's being made with industries, with conservationists. I don't see a roundtable. I don't see town hall meetings. I don't see any funding. I've seen lax regulations coming through the General Assembly that allow way more coastal development and habitat degradation than what should be allowed.
Is that a question?
That's not a question, that's a comment. Sorry about that. final question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for continued allowing me to have the table here. Crossing state boundaries to a water body such as the Chesapeake Bay that has never had trawling, largest estuary on the East Coast, they're experiencing the same issues we are with the same species. They have zero bycatch in a trawl and have essentially the entire system into a nursery area with their lack of trawling industry. What do you suggest is the issue in the Chesapeake Bay with bycatch or the lack thereof, and the species not being productive in those areas?
That's a question.
That is a question.
The first part, I wish we could control the entire General Assembly and the entire water quality environment. We're doing our part, and we would welcome all other collaborators. The second part, out of my wheelhouse, turn it back over to Dr. Daniel.
Yeah, and I can sort of maybe add to that a little bit, Mike, and that is that you know, the Chesapeake Bay functions very differently than Pamlico Sound, the Albemarle-Pamlico Sound region, and the productivity of the Pamlico Sound as a nursery ground has diminished greatly over time. And there's no question, if you talk to the folks in Virginia, and especially you talk to the folks down in the South Atlantic, many of the declines in their fisheries can be due to the fact that the production engine of Pamlico Sound has become less and less productive, and they're not pumping out the fish that there were. There's still a lot of genetic work that still needs to be done on some of the more migratory fish, but certainly with spotting croaker, that tends to be one of the issues. And so I think that many of the species that are in decline, there are multiple reasons. I think overfishing is a large part of it. But what we are seeing in North Carolina, when, you know, Virginia is now harvesting 75% of the spot croaker and weakfish. We used to harvest 75% of the spot croaker and weakfish. So, I mean, it's just completely shifted over and reversed the trend. You know, we now sit, if you look at the fisheries economics of the U.S. NIMS report, North Carolina is now number 17 in the coastal fishing communities behind Rhode Island and Georgia. So we're just below Rhode Island and Georgia, two basically counties could have more seafood harvest a year than North Carolina does, and we used to be up in the top.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for a follow-up. I'm just going to add that I oppose this petition. I think I share the sentiment of the director and the division. I think there's a public process. You're more than invited to participate in that. I think this is a very complex issue, and that this one petition doesn't simply fix it. I think my decision to oppose it is based on, you know, the commercial industry not being able to function, you know, and be productive 3 days a week. You know, there's weather factors. There's just so many factors that's involved in being productive commercially that goes deeper than just dragging a net. I mean, that, you know, or setting a net or setting a crab pot or setting anything, any type of gear. You know, I just wanted to give my reasons for opposition. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to do our comments in just a minute. Right now, do we have any more questions of the Federation or staff on this issue? Okay, if not, I'd like to ask Sean to step up. He's got a little legal presentation about some of the legal perspective on what we are maybe doing or may not. So we will need to get Sean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.